Now, welcome to another inspiring edition of Sound Insight with Dr. Tom Curran.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. It's great to be with you today. This is Dr. Tom Curran. I have a delightful guest I've never had on before, and it was a wonderful opportunity I had to interview her. Her name is Dr. Mary Ruth Hackett. She is incredibly educated and experienced around the whole realm of parenting and identity formation. And you'll get to learn and benefit from that today. She's also leading a day-long day of reflection coming up towards the end of September at the Immaculate Heart Retreat Center. So stay tuned for an amazing interview with Dr. Mary Ruth Hackett. Well, let me welcome to the program Dr. Mary Ruth Hackett joining me from, are you down in Arizona when we're doing this?
I am. I'm in Arizona where it is still really, really hot, and it just doesn't seem to get cool until it gets chilly.
Well, Dr. Hackett, when you move to Boise, you'll understand the high desert is not nearly as bad, but it's quite as sunny and lovely here in Boise, Idaho. So there's my little, I'm good at sales. Watch out. You just might end up.
Being an Arizonan, I don't actually want anybody else to come to Arizona. So I always just talk about how miserable it is here, even though I'm a native and I've lived here forever. And I want all my kids to come back here and I want everybody to live here. But I actually don't want everybody to live here because then the traffic gets bad.
That's so clever, but now it's been totally exposed. Okay.
It has been. We say we don't shovel sunshine because it's terrible here in the summer, but we don't shovel sunshine. And you guys who get under many feet of snow, we never do that. So
that is funny. I love it. Now, you're going to learn a lot, folks, about Dr. Mary Ruth Hackett today on the program. She is a wife and a mother. She is an author. Again, she is a PhD in educational psychology with an emphasis on something to do with lifespan. That's the official title she has, educational psychology with something to do with lifespan. Is that right?
Yes, all my official titles have something to do with in the subtitle. It's educational psychology with an emphasis in lifespan, human development. So basically, how does the person develop on a natural trajectory from womb to tomb? How do we just keep growing as we experience life? And what does that look like in a non-abnormal setting? So it's not a clinical psychology setting where I'm talking to clients, sitting on a couch type of talk therapy. It's all about educating others about how we grow and develop. It's talking to parents, it's talking to educators and other educators, teachers. And I just love being sort of like a translator for people. Helping them to understand a little bit better what the research is on the way our kids are growing and developing, for instance, and helping parents figure out the best way to approach certain situations. Kids are a marvel because they're yours, so you feel like you should know how to parent, but they're so weird sometimes and they change all the time. So it can be a struggle.
Well, you said, I'm like, okay, where's the book she wrote about raising teens? That has to be one of the stages in life is when your kids hit the teen years. I'm telling you, I gave the best talks on raising kids and how to raise teens before I had any.
Right. Because then you had them. And as I'm giving a talk fairly soon. And one of the things that I'm going to tell the parents is look, people don't talk about raising teens because the stories aren't yours to share anymore. The stories belong to those teens. So when you go through struggles or even joys, it's very hard to share those without overexposing your own children who are all of a sudden very socially aware of what's going on in the world. So yeah, a lot of parent educators themselves are very closed-mouthed about the teen years because one, it's a struggle, and two, it's a shared struggle more so than if your toddler's misbehaving in the grocery store, you can tell other parents about it and think, oh, I just about died in embarrassment because my toddler was doing this and such and everyone was looking at me and it was so embarrassing. And yeah, it is really embarrassing, but the stuff that you go through as the parent of a teen is a little more than just embarrassing if it gets out. They're real struggles. They're really, really important topics. Someone told me once when I had a bunch of little kids, little kids, little problems, big kids, big problems. And I honestly wanted to throat punch the person because I was so, you just don't even understand what I'm going through, lady. I've got four kids and they're all just so little and I don't know what I'm doing. And then I had teens and all of a sudden I understood. Oh, that's what you mean by big problems. Okay, I get it. I get it.
Yeah, it's so funny. I think about the point that you just said is a striking one that you want to be able to share with other parents, but to do so in a public setting does involve kind of exposing the kids. And what I have found is that the greatest crises that Carrie, my wife, and I have experienced in raising our nine kiddos have been in the teen years. And it's been they've been the biggest crosses, but at the same time, the greatest gifts. I know that sounds, and the cross itself was the gift. And it was an experience like that as it was just when we were experiencing the crucifying aspects of it. No, it was just crucifying.
Right.
But through it, there was a resurrection. There was a going through a death and coming to a new kind of, again, the life of God began operating in Carrie and my life in a way that it just would not have, or most likely wouldn't have, had we not been just nailed to the crosses of what we were going through with our kids, which rolled back up into our relationship as well.
I can relate so much when I think of the most difficult experiences. So for your listeners, my kids are 13, 17, 19, and 22. And our most difficult experiences as a family have been when one of the children is suffering in a particular way, perhaps because of something that they did. And us needing to deal with it as a family, for Bob and I to have to deal with it as a couple. But the beauty that came out of that struggle in terms of the triadic relationship, I will say that the mother, the father, and the child, the trust, the vulnerability, the humility, the understanding on the part of the child that when mom and dad say, I'll love you forever and I'll be here for you forever, and there's nothing that you can do that will take away my love for you. Oh, they actually meant it. Oh, they actually are here for me forever. Oh, they actually don't just love me because I get straight A's. They love me when I mess up. They love me in the ugliness. They love me in the yuckiness. They love me in the mistake. And
Call
it's
it the
such a
act of
beautiful
rebellion,
opportunity.
in the very active rebellion, not act of rebellion, but being in active rebellion, not loving the behavior, but loving the son or daughter.
Yes.
The trial I'm talking about involved a daughter, and my wife Carrie and I have talked about it on the radio to be of encouragement to parents that you're going to get through stuff. And one of the most powerful things that any of my kids have ever said to me came in the middle of a letter written by this daughter to us in the midst of a bunch of other stuff that was really ugly. But in the middle of it, she said, "Thank you for loving me enough to not let me get away with things that you know are not good for me." I mean, can you
Absolutely.
imagine that? Thank you for loving me enough to not let me get away with things that you know are not good for me.
Parents are there to provide those guardrails. I like to describe to parents that we provide those guardrails and they're going to push against them. They're going to bump against them. They are going to scrape against them. But we have to have those guardrails there or they go off the cliff. And we choose where we put those guardrails. And sometimes parents will want to say, well, I just want them to go and make their own mistakes. And I say, absolutely, they are going to do that. But you decide where that line is because they are going to cross that line. And the question is, when they cross that line, are they going to hit a guardrail or are they going to go off the cliff?
I like that. Again, I'm talking with Mary Ruth Hackett. You can tell her expertise as a parent, well, not only from a research standpoint as a PhD scientist, but also as someone who's raising four kids, as an active Catholic, an actual convert to the Catholic faith. And she has a podcast called Parenting Smarts. Parenting Smarts. And by the way, you can access her blog, her podcast, her book that she's written, which we're going to talk about, Daughter by Design, by going to maryruthhackett.com. And Hackett is Hackett, maryruthhackett.com. I'll give out that information again. And folks, the gift of Mary Ruth being on my program today is really because she's coming to the Spokane area. And already, folks, if you can't tell, you want to be at her day of reflection on being a Catholic parent. It's for Catholic parents, and it's about elevating your parenting. It's happening at the Immaculate Heart Retreat Center, ihrc.net. I'll give out more information. It's coming up, though, on September the 26th through the 27th. That's Friday, late afternoon, 4:30 to Saturday, late afternoon. Give 24 hours over to being a better Catholic parent, elevating it in the light of our faith and good science. And receive the gift of Mary Ruth, which, again, I just thank you, Mary Ruth, for being with me today. So diving in, Mary Ruth, you had this incredible background as a PhD scientist, and yet in comes the Catholic faith. There's a conversion here. Love to hear a bit about what was it that drew you into the heart of the church? What drew you to become Catholic?
Well, suffering. Personal suffering. I mean, that's the short answer. The longer answer is I had married a Catholic who was perfectly happy marrying a non-Catholic. We attended Mass together. I was a devout Protestant. I had been the secretary at my church. I had been an organist for a while, substitute organist. I will say I was never very good. But I'd grown up at our neighborhood, non-denominational Protestant church, and had a relationship with the Lord, sort of, I thought, but a deep love for God and an acceptance of wanting more, I will say. And then my husband and I, in between our first and second, we lost a child early in pregnancy. But I was understandably devastated, and found such solace in the fact that the Catholic Church recognized that that was a baby. And even though it wasn't viable yet outside the wound, that was my baby. And he saw how devastated I was a little bit at a loss, and asked if I wanted to go speak with the priest at the church. And I said, yes. I mean, just unequivocally, yes. I knew I needed help. And sitting in that priest's office was the first time I felt the Holy Spirit. It was the first time I felt the presence of the Lord. And I wanted to know why. I wanted to know why, having grown up in a church, in a family that loved the Lord, being involved in ministry as a teen, as a young adult, working for the church when I was in graduate school, why had I never felt this before? And so that opened me up to the intellectual exercise of really looking at the church and what the church, the Catholic Church, believes. And I was in the midst of writing my dissertation at the time. So I got into this beautiful little routine. I would put my youngest down for his nap, and I would either work on a draft of my dissertation, or if I had sent off that draft, I would spend that nap time, that 1 to 2 hours, just exploring the Catholic faith and reading. I spent a lot of time on Catholic Answers and various other websites to say, what actually does the church believe? And it didn't take long before I realized that there was one church, and that was the Catholic Church, and that I needed to be a part of that. And so maybe 3 or 4 months into this process, I asked my husband if he would be my sponsor. And it was the first he had heard of anything about me converting. And he, of course, said yes. And that started moving our family in a whole different direction, because he experienced a real reversion and a real growth in his faith, being catechized again as an adult. And with my conversion, and his reversion, we just set our family on a straighter path to holiness. I'll say that. Not that the Lord wouldn't have gotten us where he wants us. He always can do that. But I converted and I graduated and started just doing ministry work at that point. I became a stay-at-home mom to my, I was pregnant with another one. So I had my two little boys at home and I just wanted to know everything there was because now I saw myself as responsible for raising little Catholic hearts. And so I wanted to be able to answer their questions when they had questions. And so I started my own little catechesis. I've been a sponsor for RCIA as well to just kind of keep coming back to it and becoming recatechized and recatechized and doing everything I can to just grow in my faith and continue to grow. So that's the whole story. I'm in the deep water. I am in hook, line, and sinker now.
That's so powerful. Thank you for sharing that, Mary Ruth. And again, it's one of those mysterious things where, oh, what brought you into the Catholic faith? Suffering, right? It's
Suffering. My baby.
right
That's what
through the
I say my
cross.
baby Lily. Yep, my baby Lily brought me to the faith.
Wow. And you
Yeah.
know what? She's loving you now,
Yeah.
right? Smiling and in the fullness of life.
Yeah.
So it's a powerful thing. It's a very powerful thing. So you're talking about parenting, elevating your parenting. And when I have a chance to talk to men or Carrie and I talk to couples, I'll use the themes of lead, provide, protect. Lead, provide, protect. That's what parents do. And so lead is go before, provide is be with, protect is I've got your back, right? So it's that whole reality of the journey. And is there a framework that you like to use when you, like, again, you've got this very rich background of not only your lived experience and your study of the Catholic faith, but your educational background as a research scientist in this field. Is there a framework that you found helpful to like map out? Because I know that you value very much this connection between science and the rigorous research, well done, and the life of faith, like faith and reason go together, right?
Right.
So just are there models or are there themes that you've drawn from the literature that you find particularly helpful as an entry point to understanding parenting?
Well, I'm gonna answer this question a couple different ways. So the first thing I would say is I definitely have a different approach than a lot because as a convert, I'm just on fire for the church. And because I went to graduate school before I converted, I learned everything not as a well as a Protestant, but still a Christian. But then I relearned it as a parent and had to interpret it a little bit differently as a Catholic than maybe my first look at it. So let's take discipline, for instance. So I can look at the literature and I can say, okay, well, this is what it maybe says that we should do at certain ages. And then I look and I say, okay, well, practically, what does that mean as a mom? And then I say, okay, but as a Catholic mom, as someone whose goal is holiness for her kids, whose goal at this age, for instance, with the really little ones, is trust and establishing their trust. Okay, now what does it mean? And so I sort of take things in three different ways when I look at them, and then I swirl it all together. And I said, well, this is kind of what the research says. This is how I apply it in my home, and this is why it's important. This is why I do it that way as a Catholic. So I kind of hit all three of those areas.
An
And
example
then
of that, if you don't mind. I know you're I don't want to cut off your point midstream, but I'm thinking like the importance of meals or celebrating holidays or the importance of an environment or the approach to should you the kid have his own bedroom, you
Oh
know,
my goodness. Yeah, there's so
I'm
many
throwing a
of
bunch of
these.
stuff at you
You
to give you a
are, you
chance to kind of
are.
think about
Okay, so let's say I'm totally spitballing here, but let's say like motivation. Okay, so motivation theory would say When you okay, no, let's go to anxiety. Let's go to something that really so many kids struggle with right now. Let's go to
And
anxiety.
their parents. Okay, so I'm in this. I'm still a kid too then, so.
So anxiety is something that is just off the charts right now for kids. So, one of the things that can help when people get anxious is getting grounded in the senses, where you may go outside. What do you notice? What do you hear? What do you smell? What do you feel? Do you feel the sun on you? Do you feel the grass underneath your feet? Like, so getting grounded in those senses, right? Because one of the things that we know is that when you're in nature, the front, I'm going to get a little technical, sorry, the prefrontal cortex gets a break a little bit. Okay, so that's where you have focused attention, but it's also where you have rumination of thoughts, where you just keep ruminating on things over and over and over again. And that often can cause anxiety. So you go outside, you get outside of yourself, so to speak, and you're able to experience the world. My son and I went for a walk the other day, and I was talking to him about this grounding in nature and how great it is for the body to be grounded in nature. And we talked about all the things that we had noticed on our little walk together, and how that is so good for, again, silencing those in that internal whirling that can happen when we get upset about something.
All right, and I'm going to just say
So,
this. Let me just say it like this. So, for instance, so for my younger kids, like we say, parents that have little kids, and you're seeing that they might be anxious about something, or they're talking to you, and you can see that they're talking from a place of anxiety. You might just say to them, "Hey, you know what? Go out in the backyard. Just send them out into nature." And you're not saying to them, "Feel the grass under your feet and notice the sun on your." You just immerse them in that experience. But for older kids, you're giving them coping strategies. And so at some point you articulate it and you bring it out, and you say to them, when you begin to feel anxious, here's a strategy to employ. Is that what you mean?
And then to add the third element of it is gratitude for the Lord, for what he's given. So, as a Catholic, right, I always want to be directing everything back to the Lord. Now, I'm not always in those, unauthentic ways where it's like, Mom never shuts up about God, right? You don't want to do that. There's a limit. But where it's a natural thing. So when maybe taking that child outside with you and saying, hey, you know what? I know this has been a kind of a rough day. Let's go for a walk. And you point out that beautiful sunset. And you just say, look at that beautiful sunset. Like God created that just for us. Like God knew we were going to go on this walk and experience that. Like, can you imagine a God who loves you so much to give you such a beautiful sunset today? Or to talk about the birds that, are walking, on the little path in front of you and say, look at those little birds. It reminds me of you and me. Like God gives us someone to be on this journey with. Even the birds have a mama to be with them in this struggle. So talking about God, talking about creation takes it just one step further, and being able to give gratitude. Like, I'm so glad we're in this together, because gratitude is what helps you to build joy within a person. And so that can be a great antidote to that anxiety. Now, it has to be done authentically, though, because you can't just simply look at your child and say, hey, go outside for a little while and find something you're grateful for. Like,
And do
then
it
it's
right
just kind of
now,
like,
quickly.
what's going
And
on? Yeah, exactly. Like, hey, we're
then
going to
get
leave
back
in
in here
about
and do your
10 minutes.
homework, right?
Exactly. You got about 10 minutes go. But it does point out the importance of when they have had a difficult day, giving them some time to just go outside and play and just go outside and be a kid is so important. And so that's maybe my approach in general to, or would be an example of my approach in general to taking the research, applying it to family life, And not just any family life, but Catholic family life. How are we living our lives out differently as Catholics? And how can we use the literature, the research, the information that we have to help us on that pursuit of holiness as a family?
That's Dr. Mary Ruth Hackett talking with me today. And I find this so fascinating because I'm a systematic theologian. So my background's philosophical theology. I tend to think in abstract ideas and frameworks. And that's what I asked you about. And you came back with this grounded research that drew out principles and insights that lead to good practices. And I'm thinking, dang, this is super valuable. So folks, I gotta just say it again. If you're in the Spokane area, she's coming to town in just a few weeks. She'll be here the 26th and 27th, leading a 24-hour retreat. Only it's a day. Give a day to your parenting, the call that you have as parents. Go together. Get hubby, go bring your wife, go and spend a day at the Immaculate Heart Retreat Center and with Mary Ruth Hackett, and elevate your parenting. That's a precious treasure. And I mean, the precious treasure is our faith, the precious treasure of your call to be parents, the precious treasure of getting away. Guess what? At an incredibly beautiful setting, shed some of that anxiety, give thanks to the Lord at the Immaculate Heart Retreat Center, and the treasure of Mary Ruth Hackett coming to town to be able to engage with you in conversation. So full of treasures there, Mary Ruth.
Thank
All
you.
right, so I'm going to dive in. I've got about 18 other topics here while I've got you. I feel like this is a free counseling session. I love this. This is great. And I know you said you're not a
I
therapist,
don't
but
do counseling. I'm
I
not a
know, I know. Yeah.
therapist. I
Well,
always
okay.
have
So
people ask me, though. I need to get like some sort of, I don't know, online coaching or something going because people always ask.
yeah, for sure. I can see why, right? Just to sort of sit at your feet. Well, you can sit at her feet in a variety of ways. Go to MaryRuthHackett.com. Mary Ruth Hackett, HackettEtt.com. She also has a podcast where you can hear her engage with other guests on parenting things called Parenting Smarts. You can access it through MaryRuthHackett.com. Parenting Smarts is the name of the podcast. She has a blog there as well. And she's also written a book. And I want to dive into this book because the book is called Daughter by Design. And it has a very powerful theme, discovering your identity as God's beloved daughter. And sure enough, in this wonderful book, it involves understanding identity. But boy, in order to really understand and live that identity, you're going to go through challenges and crosses, and you better be rooted in prayer, right? So these three fundamental or major parts of your book really lay that out. But it begins with the concept of identity. And you did a couple of things in the book that I found unique. I've never read that before, and I've read a lot of books for a lot of years. So I'll tell you what it is in a little bit, but I want to just say, what motivated you to write this book, which is Daughter by Design, to discover your identity as God's beloved daughter? What was the motivating factor for you?
Well, I really wanted to write a very different book. I wanted to write a parenting book. And I was talking with my spiritual advisor at the time. And I asked him, I said, you know, Father, I've got all of these ideas in my head. I've got all of this content with the podcast. And I just don't feel like I'm getting any direction from the Lord about how I should be putting it together, actually packaging all this content for parents. And at that point, I wasn't doing much speaking. And I said, I feel like there's just stuff here that needs to get out in the hands of parents. And he told me very sweetly, very kindly, that in order to be the best parent we can be, we have to first be the best son or daughter that we can be for the Lord, that we have to live that life, that role as a son or daughter first. And he challenged me to not get ahead, but rather to go back and to say, like, what is it that feeds us as moms and dads? And it is that relationship with the Lord. What part of us stays but still grows throughout our whole life? And it's that role for me as a daughter. Right? It's the primary embodiment of who I am. It is the role that I was given when I was born, and I will have that role I will have that title, so to speak, when I die. Statistically speaking, I will probably outlive my role as a wife and become a widow. My children will leave the home, and I'll feel less like a mother and more like a grandmother, maybe. I don't know. I'm not there yet. But this role as a daughter is a relationship, really even more than a role, that I will have the ability to nurture, that I will receive the Lord's love and nurturing when I'm 8 and when I'm 80. It will stay there. And so he challenged me to write a book, because one of my other areas within lifespan human development is identity development. That is sort of something that always drew me. That's what I did my master's and my dissertation on. Is identity development, not identity politics, people. Like, if you're thinking, oh, identity, red flag, red flag. No, not that kind of identity. But literally, like, who are we as sons and daughters of God? And so I went that route, and I just started writing and writing and rewriting, and it was my first book. It's my baby, and I love it.
Mary Ruth, so one of the things that is refreshing, and I want you to like break it open some more, is you said, I'm a daughter of God. I'm the Lord's daughter. You're the Father's daughter. You're a daughter of the Father. You're not a daughter of Jesus. You're a
No,
daughter of
it's
the
God the
Father.
Father.
And I want you to talk more about that, because when we hear, when we read books on prayer, when we hear talks on growing in relationship with God, front and center is Jesus.
Yes.
And rightly so, because Jesus shows us the Father. He is the way to the Father. We share in his sonship, as sons and daughters of God. But you hone in a way that like made me stop in the first chapters of the book, where you raised the question and you didn't let it go. You raised the question, what does it mean to be a daughter? What does it mean to say, I am a daughter? What does it mean to root your deepest sense of identity in that name, daughter? And I found that very refreshing and striking, and it was wonderfully like pointing and nudging the readers, these are women, to say, look to not just God, but look to the Father. And so I open that up for us. Talk a bit more about
It
that.
is so important. We at one point I was talking with someone about the title and publishing, and I was given the recommendation that I not use the word daughter in the title, because that word has negative connotations for some people, especially as adult women. And I bristled at that. And I push back against that. Because if daughter has negative connotations for you, and if you struggle wanting to or having any interest in identifying as the daughter of a beloved father, then you deserve to reclaim that identity. And it's even more important that you reclaim that identity, because every woman deserves to experience the love of her father. Every man deserves to experience the love of his father. There's no love like that. To be created to give and receive love by this good and loving father, and not to know how to give or receive love to and with him, is a tragedy. And so I would just, if anybody is listening to this and thinking, like, oh gosh, I don't know that I would want to read a book about it being a daughter of God, the book is written for you. It is waiting there for you because you deserve even more this book. I'd love to send you a free copy. I mean, I just because you need it. There's nothing like the love of a father. When I
And
first converted,
you don't get it unless you experience it,
no.
right?
It
Well,
yeah.
and I don't want to cut your story off. I
No,
just,
go ahead.
here's something. So encounter, I don't know if you've heard of encounter, the encounter of school of ministry. It has to do with the sensitivity that the Lord today is moving in signs and wonders and equipping the people of God to act in the gifts of the Spirit to help be a conduit of signs and wonders and deeds of power that will open people to Christ and the gospel, right? Okay, great. Yeah, oh, by the way, okay, great, right? Just so, by the way, signs and wonders, Holy Spirit moving. But here's the thing. I would say that as much as that takes the final focus in terms of people who go through their 2-year program, it begins, and the thing that I think has probably the biggest like transformative impact is not like this baptism in the Holy Spirit and this release of God's Spirit in them. It's the first session, the first segment, the first chunk of teaching is on identity. And they like one of the core entry point passages of Scripture is the baptism of Jesus, where the Father speaks from heaven, "This is my beloved Son, in whom I delight." And the challenge, the provocative challenge given in encounter is, you might say you believe in God the Father Almighty, but have you ever encountered the delight that the Father takes in you? And are you willing to risk and to permit and to ask, "Lord, Father, take delight in me. Who am I to you?" Right? And that's what transforms people, which is so fascinating, right? Oh yeah, eventually you get to the Holy Spirit stuff and the gift stuff and the power stuff, but it all begins with that foundation that our God is Abba, Father, Daddy. And to take the risk of allowing Abba, Father, to be a father to me. I have to tell you, it's like some of the most transformative things that have ever happened in my own life of faith has been as a result of risking that prayer, taking that prayer. And so I just am confirming through my own experience and then just this reference to encounter. I don't know if any of that jumps out at you.
Well, I was going to say one of the a few of the things about being a son or daughter that might be worth pointing out is that, as a son or daughter, if you have a healthy relationship with the father, there's a deep trust, there's a deep vulnerability, there's a deep humility, and there's a real reliance on him to provide and protect, to direct. And those are all essential components of just growing in holiness in general, according to any of the saints. Humility is a prerequisite, deep trust. If you want to grow in your relationship with God, our triune God, it's going to require all of those. And by focusing on that role as a daughter and learning to give and receive love of and from the Father, I almost see that's like almost like a fast track. Sort of like going to daily mass is a fast track to like helping you develop your heart, the heart of Jesus. Within you to be able to experience his heart, his body, blood, soul, and divinity in the Blessed Sacrament every day. It can't help but transform your heart. Learning to live as a son or daughter similarly is just it's just a beautiful thing. I'd say I don't know how to put it into words, and I'm like, oh yeah, you do. You wrote a book about it. So
But you know what? It's I think it's one of those things where it's a truth that has no bottom, right? So you're always going to encounter that sense of stammering before the mystery, right? The reality is so big and so immense that we ought to stand in awe and wonder, and no words are really going to be fully satisfying, right? You may be aware of this. So one of the themes in John Paul II, you know, that each person's a gift, is he identifies this age as an age of mistrust. And one of the aspects of that is that original sin has several different aspects to it. And in tradition, the first aspect was pride. It's exalting oneself. And then, you know, the devil got humbled. As you moved through the second millennium, it moved from pride to disobedience. I will not serve. And so that was more something that showed up quite a bit in Protestant theology. So original sin was a fundamental act of disobedience. John Paul II says, we've moved in this third millennium into an age of mistrust, where I don't trust you. It's the demonic James chapter 1, the devils believe and they tremble. They believe in God, but they don't trust. And therefore they're not, use the word vulnerable. They're not going to entrust. They're not going to be open to allow the drawing near. And it seems to me that the demonic strategy of today, one of them is to create walls of mistrust, to create systems that prevent authentic vulnerability and entrustment to the God who is utterly trustworthy. I sense it so deeply in my own spirit that, like, the demonic attack is you cannot trust God. You can't trust him. So I don't know if any of that's new to you.
Yeah, it goes, I would say, again, you know, drawing from the science and literature, it goes even one step further, because Gen Z is specifically characterized. And this is, again, like if your child is maybe like 13 to 25, if that's sort of roughly the Gen Z
range.
That's
my youngest and oldest. So you're speaking to all my kids.
They have an incredible distrust of institutions as a cohort, like just vastly different than, you know, my generation and the millennials. I'm not a than the millennials or the Gen Xers. I'm a Gen Xer. And so that's just fascinating to me to think that, you know, you're talking about this mistrust in this time, and these children are coming of age, and they're coming of age in such a way that their mistrust is even greater. And they are also one of the loneliest generations. And so they mistrust institutions, they mistrust religion, they mistrust others. And then we see as a byproduct of that, perhaps, or maybe a corollary, I don't know if it's which one it is, this incredible loneliness and desire to belong, but mistrust to such a level that they're unwilling to pursue those sorts of relationships or encounters that would provide them with that sense of belonging. And the mental health suffers as a result.
So again, I'm talking with Dr. Mary Ruth Hackett, and go to maryruthhackett.com, get a hold of the book, Daughter by Design, go check out her podcast, which is Parenting Smarts. All of that information you can get on Mary Ruth Hackett. That's HACKETT.com, MaryRuthHackett.com. But folks, if you are in the Spokane area, or you can get there coming up on the 26th to the 27th, that's a Friday, 4:30 in the afternoon to Saturday, 4:30 in the afternoon. She's doing a 24-hour retreat on elevating your parenting as Catholics. And again, you've just been able to taste just a little bit of what she has to offer in this conversation. I'm going to turn it over to you. We still have about 6 or 7 minutes left. So Dr. Hackett, among all the things that we could talk about, what's kind of prompting inside of you as something that's like, you know, I'd like to talk about this, or here's something that's on my mind.
You know, I would love for parents to understand just how lonely kids are. I think, you know, one in three youth say that they feel completely alone all the time, even when they're among other people. The loneliness is so deep in our young people, and it's they can be connected to other people, but it's not the same as belonging. And one of the long-term effects of this is that if you're lonely and you lack a sense of belonging, often that is how we find our meaning and purpose is within these relationships with others, because we can see how we are different. We can see the things that draw us together that are important to us. And we are each created with this unique purpose for this world, right? And it's very hard for us to find that on our own. It's very hard to find that when we're not a part of a community. We're not able to build those relationships of trust. We're not able to show that humility, to show that vulnerability when we are alone, when we are lonely. Not to mention loneliness is associated with, I mean, it'll cut 10 years off your life. Like that's just, it just will in terms of physical health. So 10 years is what the scientists are saying. Now, I think that came out of the Harvard longitudinal study of well-being. 10 years. So, you know, if you're thinking about your own child and you're like, well, you know, break down just like what's something. Find a way to get them connected. Find a way to get them connected. Because your connection with them is foundational, yes. But children need connections with other people as well. They need connections with people who show what's called relational authority in the literature, where there's trust, there's integrity. These people are have some sort of an expertise, and they know that they can go to them, and in times of need. And kids need six or more of those sorts of connections in their lives in order to have optimal well-being. So get them involved. Get them involved with, if you've got a great peer group at your church, if you can get them involved volunteering, if you can get them involved in sports with a really great coach, if you can just find a way, it's going to be unique for each one of your children, to get them out of their bedroom, to get them off their iPad, to get them out moving, to get them out interacting with people, to get them out serving, to get them out connecting with people in a beautiful way. And it doesn't always have to be in Catholic communities. I know my children have gone to a school that was founded by a group of Catholics, but it's not Catholic. And they've often been, you know, the only one in the classroom with ashes on their forehead on Ash Wednesday. And they've had to explain, and they've had to discuss, and they've had to understand their own faith, and it has been a beautiful thing. They went to Catholic school all the way up until sixth grade, and then they went to this virtue-based charter academy after that. But it's been a beautiful thing for them to really be able to internalize the faith in that way, away from the home, but in a way that they're sort of challenged, but they've got such a great foundation that challenges them. You know, being different and finding their own identity and learning how to express themselves and their faith in a really beautiful way. So I would say get them, so it doesn't always have to be like every circle doesn't have to be 100% Catholic and everybody's really well catechized and it's just a bunch of people who all, you know, it can be groups that challenge them. But man, get them out, find ways to connect them because loneliness is such a struggle for our youth today.
So fascinating. Again, that's Dr. Mary Ruth Hackett sharing some of the findings of recent research about well-being in this cohort of young people. Again, so many of the folks listening have kids or grandkids in that in that age span. You said 13 to 25, and I my ears are just all perked up, I'm telling you. And it's like, we made a decision to send our kids that remain now at home to a classical school format. It's discipleship based, and therefore it's based on a common creed or belief. And I'm like, wow, this is so striking to me, because it is intended, I didn't even realize it, but it's sort of an antidote to mistrust of institutions. If you put them into a healthy institution that lead them to flourish and flourish in faith in their most important relationship with the Lord, and they are there finding a place to belong where they're accepted and acceptable and are celebrated, and they're playing sports at the school, so it elevates that as well. And that whole idea of on a team, you're going to be, I'm feeling better
Beautiful.
about my life. My
Well
anxiety
done.
has gone down a bit, Mary Ruth, but this
I
is
mean, that's great, because we started with me calling you Plato,
yeah.
not Plato, Plato, folks.
Right.
The
That's
Plato
very true.
guardrails. You're doing a great job. Great job,
Yeah.
Tom.
Thank you. I needed to be affirmed. Now I feel like now, Lord, you can let me go in peace. Your word has been fulfilled. Mary Hackett has spoken into my life. Mary Ruth. Mary Ruth, any final comments that you'd like to say in the time that remains about the what happens on a day of retreat with you, and just a chance to invite folks to come out?
Yeah, I would just say to all you parents who are listening, it's hard. It's hard. It's okay that it's a struggle. You're gonna grow. They're gonna grow. You're not gonna do it perfectly. Lord knows I'm not doing it perfectly. But we're not expected to be perfect. It's just progress that we want to be moving towards. A little better each day, and a little closer in your relationship with the Lord and with each other each day. And sometimes it's messy. Usually it's messy in some way or another. I would love to meet you. We're going to be doing a Q&A if you're thinking, gosh, I just really wish I could talk to her about this. One of the sessions is going to be an hour-long Q&A. It's going to be a small group. The retreat center doesn't hold hundreds of people. So it'll be a small group. I'll be having meals with everybody. I'll be around the whole time. So we'll have time for a lot of informal conversations. We'll have time for formal Q&A, informal Q&A, and then I'll be giving three talks. One is on faithful foundations in being rooted in their faith. Another talk is going to be about being anchored in hope and learning to be resilient, because I think that that's part of the problem with our mental health crisis right now, is our parenting approach that doesn't promote emotional resilience or hope within our children. And then the third, I'll be talking about spiritual discernment of spirits within the house, and how do we just talk about things like, oh, angels and demons? Like, how do we do that in a way that's not scary, but in a way that really just takes that veil off of what's going on in the spiritual life, so that our kids can come to grow up with an awareness of the invisible world, of angels being present all around them.
That's so
It's a
lovely.
great
Thank you.
deal, too. It's a great
Yeah.
deal. I mean, when I look at the price for these tickets, I'm like, wait a minute, you're getting lodging, three meals, three talks and a Q&A. Like, I don't know how the retreat center is doing it, but it's a great deal.
They are a nonprofit organization, is how they do it. And
Well, thank you to
you
their
know
sponsors.
the two primary cooks at the retreat center are like top-notch chefs.
Oh,
Actually
wow.
left real rest like real top-notch restaurants and now give here. So get ready for some amazing meals is what you should get ready for.
Well, and I
Yeah.
have food issues, so I was blown away that they're able to deal with my, like, oh, well, I can't eat this, I can eat this. And she's like, don't worry about it. Our chefs can take care of everything. I'm like, this is incredible.
Yes. Yeah, very, very true. So, all right. Well, Mary Ruth, thank you so much for taking time to be with me today. I really appreciate it. It's been a delight in, engaging in this conversation with you. And folks, IHRC.net, IHRC.net, Immaculate Heart Retreat Center, to sign up for her day for Catholic parents. And that's September the 26th through the 27th, 4:30 to 4:30. And then MaryRuthHackett.com. Mary Ruth, thank you.
Thank you.